You are listening to a Screenfish one-on-one live with actress Anna Schaefer. Anna is the star of Elizabeth Blue, the story of a young woman dealing with mental health issues. And we get to talk with Anna about her journey from child model all the way up to Hollywood, and also how to help those with mental health issues. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Well, thank you for calling me. I'm glad that we could connect.
Yeah, me too.
I saw Elizabeth Blue, and I was really impressed. I was not just with the film itself, but especially with your performance. I thought you did a wonderful job.
Oh, thank you so much.
It really is a fascinating story of talking about mental health issues. But before we talk about the film, I'm really interested in your story. If I'm right and read your bio properly, I mean, this is you've been all over the world at a very young age. Doing modeling and whatnot. I was wondering, why did you want to get into acting in the first place?
Well, I sort of the first time I told my mom that I wanted to be an actress, I was like, I was maybe 8.
Mm.
And it came right after a very big move for my family from Russia to the United States. So the first few years of being here, like I didn't speak English, I didn't know anyone, and it was a huge transition for me.
Hmm.
And I sort of remember feeling, you know, alone, and it's a foreign place, and I would turn to cartoons and films and sort of live in these pretend worlds that I would create for myself. And I think then is when I told my mom, like, I want to be an actress. I want to act. I want to pretend to be different people. And I guess at 8, my mom's like, okay, that's cute. Fine. You could do whatever you want. Be anything you want. And I, you know, did all the school plays. And then at 13, my sister represented this photographer, Paola Gudacki, who's actually really successful now. And it was the start of her career. And she was like, oh, can I photograph your sister for something? And so we did that. And then Elite Modeling Agency saw the pictures and they were like, oh, she wouldn't be a model. When I was 13, I was a baby.
Hmm.
And I was like, sure, that sounds like fun. So very quickly, my kind of world got turned upside down because I started traveling, you know, to Paris and Milan and, you know, to New York City and kind of missing a lot of school and doing the runway shows and taking photographs and getting hair and makeup. And it was great because you also got to experience sort of, it wasn't acting, but it was still kind of putting on this new face and hair and kind of being someone you're not really.
Sure.
And then naturally, I just sort of wanted to make that transition because I've always had acting on my mind. But it took me a while because my parents, when I was older, weren't as supportive as they were when I was 8.
Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe go to college, you know, go study business or something where you could, you know, build a life around that. And so I listened to them, and I went to NYU for a little bit, but at night I did classes at Stella Adler and HB Studios because I just really still wanted to pursue acting.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I was 22 that I was actually engaged to be married. I know, ridiculous. Like, I say it now and I'm like, oh my God, who's engaged at 22? So young. But I was engaged to be married, and I just woke up one morning and realize, like, what am I doing? Like, this is not my dream. This is not what I want to do. So I went to my mom and I was like, I'm not getting married, which I think she was happy about. And I was like, but I'm moving to LA, which she was devastated about.
Mm-hmm.
My baby's leaving me. And I moved to LA and sort of just went full steam and started meeting people and auditioning. And that's sort of how I came, you know, into this world. And I got very lucky. My first role was Kevin Spacey. I mean, my first scene ever on any film was with Kevin. And
wow.
It was kind of blew my mind that I got to work with him.
That was Father of Invention, right?
Yeah. And I remember my first day so well. I was just terrified. But it was from that first day when I stepped on set and we did our scene, I knew that's exactly what I wanted to do.
Mm.
As nerve-wracking as it is and as much rejection as we sort of face as actors, it's worth it.
Yeah. Is there a type of story in particular that you want to tell?
You know, I'm really attracted to sort of complex, complicated characters that have major issues. I think we all do. But I'm also really attracted to stories that are based on, you know, on true stories.
Hmm.
And every time I read a script, I either connect to a character or I don't. So it just depends, really.
Well, that's an interesting segue then here is what is it about Elizabeth Blue that you connected with that drew you to the film?
Well, I read the script and I fell in love with the story, first and foremost. And it really just broke my heart in a way. And I don't know what it was exactly, but it was this concept of not knowing what's reality and what's not. And I thought about that. I kind of applied it to my own life, and it scared me. And I think that's what really drew me in initially, because I instantly went to, like, thinking about my daughter, you know, my husband and my life and what it would be like to just sort of not know who or what I was seeing as real or not. So that, I think, was initially what drew me. And then I went in and I auditioned for Vincent. And when I got the part, I knew the story was about him based on his life. And I got to spend so much time with him and understand who he was, what he was living with, what he was dealing with firsthand. And I think that is sort of when Elizabeth came to life, really.
Like, this is a really intense role in every way. And how do you prepare for that?
At first, it was challenging. The role was definitely intense. And also you feel a sense of responsibility to portray schizophrenia the right way. Right?
Sure. Of course.
Do right by everyone who lives with it. I definitely felt that pressure. But the way I prepared for it is first Vincent was amazing. He let me... I didn't move in with him, but it felt like I moved in with him. I spent so much time with him and got to see some of his episodes, you know, happen in front of me. And I've never seen schizophrenia. I've never seen an episode before. So it was sort of my first time witnessing this. And it was really intense and emotional and scary, but it really kind of made me see it so I could use that for Elizabeth and, like, okay, that's what that looks like and that's what that potentially feels like. And I also got to spend a lot of time with Joe Dane, the producer, who was Vincent's husband, and I got the other side of it. So Vinny could tell me what it feels like and what it looks like from his point of view, and then Joe could tell me what it really looks like, because a lot of times when Vincent has episodes, he remembers what he hears or what he sees, but he doesn't necessarily remember what his reaction to it. So I had Joe from the other side tell me, like, well, this is what it looks like from the side. I mean, I felt very honored that they let me into their lives and trusted me enough to sort of open up and share with me some really hard times for them. And then I remember Vinny came over and gave me this, like, 500-page book called Surviving Schizophrenia, which I read, which was really interesting and informative. But I think the way Elizabeth came to life is really by spending all that time with Vincent, seeing the episodes firsthand, seeing what it's like to live with it. And then on top of that, I got to have sessions with the real Dr. Bowman. And that was really helpful, because he, as a psychiatrist, could sort of kind of dive a little deeper and tell me, kind of make it relatable to myself in a way. And the best example he gave me that really kind of hit it out of the park for me was, he asked me if I had, he's like, do you ever have really intense dreams? Like, where you wake up and you're crying or, and I'm like, oh my God, all the time since I had my daughter, I have the craziest dreams that are sometimes really disturbing. And he goes, okay. He goes, so imagine, the same thing, basically the same thing happens in our brain when we're hallucinating and when we're having dreams. except when we're sleeping, it's contained. So we know we're sleeping. We know it's a dream. But imagine you had a dream while you were wide awake and you couldn't tell that it was a dream.
Wow.
Like, wow. And I think that really, because I don't know what it is about becoming a mom, but just really have these really awful dreams sometimes that I wake up from and I'm like either crying or I don't know if you've ever had a dream like somebody dies and you wake up sure. and it takes you a second to be like, okay, that was a dream. It didn't happen. But then you still want to call that person to be like, hi, how are you okay? Like just, you need to hear their voice.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I understand what you're saying.
Say that to that because imagine that it wasn't just waking up and saying, oh, okay, that was just a nightmare. That was just a dream. You can't do that because you don't know if it's real or not real. That was really interesting for me. And I remember in the whole script, I could kind of see every scene in my mind. But there was one scene, which is the train scene.
Yes.
Just could not relate to. I was like, I don't understand it. I don't see it. I don't know what it's supposed to look like. I don't know what it's supposed to feel like. And Vincent kept saying, don't worry, you'll get it. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. So one day during the chemistry read, it was like after the fifth guy, Vincent and I were sitting on the couch, and he sits up, and he's like, do you hear that? So naturally, I respond, and I say, oh, wait, there's like this weird noise in the next room, and I don't know what it is. He sort of cuts me off, and he goes, did you hear that? Gets up, and he's like, did you hear that? And he starts pacing the room, and his husband, Joe, instantly knew what was happening. So he, like, gets up, and he's like, Vin, look at me, Vin.
Wow.
Comes up to him, he grabs him, and Vinny pushes him off, and he's like, don't touch me. He starts looking for this noise that he's hearing. And so I remember the casting director bringing a bag over to Joe. Joe got his medication out, gave him his medication. And within like a minute or two, Vincent just went really still. And then Joe's like, we'll be right back. And he took him out of the room. And then they came back about 10 minutes later, and he was totally normal and totally fine. And he was like, did I scare you? And I said, this is actually the first time that I witnessed an episode. And I said, yes, to be honest, it did scare me because I didn't know what to do.
Sure.
I've never seen it, and I had no idea. Like, if I was alone, I don't know what I would do. And I said, but on the bright side, I know what the train scene's supposed to look like now.
Yeah, that, you know what, wow, that's intense. That was one of the standout scenes for me, to be perfectly honest with you, was the train. There seemed to be such an honesty in that moment. Now I can see why.
But you know, it's so interesting because I said this too after we filmed that. I don't know what happened in that scene or where it all came from. I was very prepared. But when we started shooting that, we only did that scene twice because, you know, I'm not crying in the scene. I'm just really, you know, searching for this noise and manic, and big train is coming towards me. I have no idea where it's coming from.
Yeah.
So the first time they called cut, I fell to the floor and I just started crying.
Wow.
And the producer came over to me. He said, are you okay? Are you okay? I said, I'm fine. I don't really know why I'm crying, but it was really emotional for me, even though it didn't feel emotional in the moment because I was just frantically trying to, like, look for this noise. It was so emotional for me, and it was almost like an out-of-body experience where I felt like it was actually happening. I felt like it was real.
It showed. Honestly, that was a standout moment in the film for me. The raccoon scene was another one that I found quite interesting.
Oh, the raccoon scene. So, another scene that, when I was actually, when I first read the script, I teared up in that moment. And I don't think that's any of the raccoon, I don't think it's a spoiler, really.
Right, I guess.
So, I was like, when we shot the scene, I couldn't act with a raccoon because, you know, it's a raccoon. And
that's right.
First, the raccoon's going to leave, and then we'll shoot you. I said, great. So, when I'm in a bathroom, I'm staring at an empty toilet, basically.
Yes.
Guys, I have to deliver this, like, farewell speech to an empty toilet. Like, there, and they're we have to see that the toilet's empty. There's nothing on it.
Right.
I was like, fine. So I did it once, and I was like, wow, I'm just really not connecting. Like, it made me tear up when I read the script, but, like, now that we're doing it, really hard to make this, like, heartfelt.
Yeah, a speech to a toilet.
Yes. On a toilet.
Yeah.
So Joe Dane actually came over to me, and he's like, hey, don't you have a dog? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, isn't she really old? And I was like, oh, I know where this is going.
Oh, no, he did not.
I was like, and then he knows me, so he's like, and so I looked at him, I go, I know where you're going. And he goes, maybe something, you know, hard, yeah, but maybe something you could use. And I was like, okay. So then I stood there, he went back into the, and I was like, hey, guys, do me a favor, call action, and then talk about it. And they were like, are you sure you're okay with us? I said, it's fine. It's life. Going to happen one day, hopefully not anytime soon, but talk about it, and then when you, I'm going to give you like a nod when I'm ready, and then just stop talking. So they call action, and Joe's like, honey is older, and one day, hopefully not soon, there might come a time where you're going to have to put her down and say goodbye to her. And I literally looked at the camera, I gave him a nod, and he stopped talking. And I looked at that toilet, I imagined my Cavalier King Charles Spaniel with her big eyes. And I imagine what it would be like to, like, God forbid, put her down.
Yeah.
And say, like, this will be the last time I pet you.
Mm.
And it broke my heart. And I'm going to start crying.
You know, in the midst of these two things, looking at between even just the train and the raccoon scene and others, there seems to be both a sense of danger and a sense of safety at the same time within the piece. I was wondering how you felt Elizabeth came to view her situation, because that, like, you could see that throughout the film it was very, very difficult for her. But for in Elizabeth's eyes, there seemed to be this balance between safety and security and danger at the same time.
Yeah, well, I think, for example, the raccoon for her was like a lovely hallucination. It was like a friend. It made her feel safe. And it wasn't a scary place to be when she saw the raccoon.
Mm-hmm.
She gets nervous at Dr. Bowman's office. The first thing she does is this raccoon appears and she pets him. So there's like a sense of security and safety with some of these hallucinations, while others, like him or the train, completely terrifying. So I think there's a really interesting, slightly strange balance. I mean, most of it is, she realizes that most of it is quite scary because she doesn't always know what's real versus what's not.
Sure.
But I think there are hallucinations that do bring some sort of safety and security for her. It's like sort of what she needs at that moment. So I think that was really interesting. But I also think, you know, dealing with anxiety and OCD and depression obviously plays a huge part in it. And she did struggle with that moment in time.
Of course. Now, you mentioned, if I heard you correctly, you said you spoke with the real Dr. Bowman. Mm-hmm. But Elizabeth Blue isn't based on an actual person, or is it a composite of other people's stories?
The character, Dr. Bowman?
Well, Dr. Bowman, you said there's a real Dr. Bowman. Is this story based on a real story?
So Dr. Bowman is Vincent's doctor. So
yes.
So the story is very much based on the writer-director's story.
Okay.
Hallucination is a hallucination he has had.
Wow, okay.
And he's actually someone that he has seen since he's, I think, 14.
Wow, I didn't realize that. Okay.
Raccoons are something he sees all the time, and he actually loves them.
Wow.
Dr. Bowman is a real person. So Adewale actually also met with Dr. Bowman to sort of get inspired. And it's based on this period in time in 2010 where all his medications plateaued and kind of started failing him. And he all of a sudden went from completely functioning to every day was a roller coaster, and no medication was working, and his hallucinations were getting out of control. So that's kind of based, it was based on that 1 year for him.
Wow. Okay.
So every hallucination actually happened to him, and Dr. Bowman's a real person.
Wow. Well, that brings even more power to the script in so many ways. How does a role like this affect you after the fact? Like, Do you feel like it changes you at all? Or this is an incredibly emotional experience, not just to prepare for, but to work through.
I think it was definitely a very hard place to live in. Hmm. And I didn't leave Elizabeth behind when I went home. The entire time we were shooting, I brought her home with me, and to the point where my husband had to like pull me aside and be like, you know, you have a 2-year-old.
Right.
I get this is your job, and I get, you know, you're all in, but like you have to find a way to disconnect from her when you're with Lila.
Hmm.
And it was hard because I was so the character, and you know, we were shooting every single day, and I was in every single scene, so I really had to sort of do some meditation and watch some silly cartoons with her to sort of bring myself back. And then I remember the day we wrapped, I came home and my husband like had my bags packed. He's like, we're going on a trip. He's like, we're going to a farm. We're staying in this little cottage and it has like apple trees and a big garden with like cucumbers and tomatoes. And he's like, we have a horse and donkeys and chickens and a rooster and ducks and there's a pond. And I was like, great. He's like, no phones, no TV, no computer. Like, okay. And like the day we wrapped, we got in a car, drove to Three River Falls, California, and stayed there for 7 days.
Wow.
And it was a really great, I'm so happy he did that for me, because it was a really great way to sort of just connect with nature, connect with my daughter, you know, connect with him, and sort of leave that back, you know, leave that where it needs to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Every time I see the film, and every time I'm around Vincent, it definitely creeps back in.
Hmm.
It definitely has an effect on me, and just more so the awareness of how many people live with it and what they go through, you know, just being aware of that, I think just opens my heart up. And sometimes I go to these places like that is hard. And I don't for a second pretend to know what it's like to live with schizophrenia, but I am deeply affected by it, and about the people that, even after I did the film, so many people that I knew that I had no idea struggled with it or had it in their family came out and told me about their experience with it, whether it was themselves or their spouse or their mom. And that's like a huge honor for people to be able to come out and speak to you about, you know, their experience of schizophrenia. I'm not schizophrenic. I just played a girl that was.
Mm.
But they felt comfortable enough to come to me and talk to me about it, which is probably the best part of this whole film, is that it opens up a conversation and people feel safe to talk about it.
That's a great place to wrap up. I got one more question for you, and it relates to that. You know, with your experience with the film and working with Vincent, I was wondering, what do you think it means to help those with mental health issues? You get a sense in the film that so many people just, or some people just aren't sure how to deal with or help those that have such significant mental health issues.
I think the way you help is by being aware and being understanding and accepting that it's okay, that we all have different things that we go through, and this is just one of them, that this is not any different than someone who is dealing, you know, with anxiety or depression, whether it's, you know, bipolar or schizophrenia, whatever it is, like, we all have issues. We're all going to be okay. And it's the person's job, whoever lives with whatever they have, to, you know, seek medical attention and get the proper medication if needed, or whatever it is. But just as humanity, it's just to be open and accepting. And I think that's all it comes down to. I think there's too much. There's a lot of judgment passed, and oh, you should be doing that, this, or you should be doing that, or like, oh, that's just, you know, like Elizabeth's mom, she was in denial about it.
Yes.
And I think that's what really hurts, is when people are in denial or not supportive or not understanding. So.
It's a really powerful film, and it's definitely worth the viewing. And as I said before, and I genuinely mean it, your performance is just remarkable.
That means a lot.
Yeah, it's excellent. So thank you, Anna. When does the film open? I think, is it the 22nd?
September 22nd in 10 cities. And then I believe they're doing an extended run in some extra cities on September 29th.
Okay, great. Well, that's definitely one to look out for. Thank you so much, Anne. It's such a privilege to talk to you, and I very much appreciate your openness and your honesty. It's just refreshing to hear.
Thank you so much, and thanks for watching the film.
Oh, absolutely.
Have a great day.
You too.